My father worked for the Secret Service for about 28 years. He protected five presidents. And before we get to the day in Dallas, I'd just like to tell just a couple of quick stories because I think it adds a little bit of flavor to it. My father was, one of the first presidents he was assigned to was Harry Truman, but at that time he was assigned to what they call the diaper detail. The diaper detail is the detail, even to this day, to my knowledge, that they use as a, you know, a way of saying you're protecting the children and or the grandchildren. It is, doesn't matter how old they are. Okay, it's not an issue of age. My father was assigned to Margaret Truman, who, of course, later became famous in her own right as a writer and stuff. And Margaret Truman was very much like her dad, President Truman, who did not really like the Secret Service, and that she would go into the ladies' room and climb out the window. Okay, and the Secret Service at that time did not have female officers, and so she generally got a pretty good head start. I tell this story because that's what I was told. And one of these days, before she passes on, I'm going to write her a letter and say, "No, I'm telling these stories. Is this true or not true?" And if it's not true, I promise not to tell them again. But it gives you some idea. Some of it was, very sad as the assassin. Some of it was interesting stories. Another interesting story was with Truman. And then I'll go, is that it was June of 1945, my father was in Potsdam, Germany at the Potsdam Conference, and we found a little notebook of his years later, and he wrote in it, "Saw Winnie and Joe for the first time today." And of course, that's Winston Churchill and Joseph Stalin. And of course, as I read that, I thought, yeah, that's the way I would write it. No, I wouldn't have written it that way, but okay. So again, just to give you, moving up to Eisenhower, a story that I just like to say about Eisenhower is that President Eisenhower, even, and you read stories about him, took a lot of hits because he played a lot of golf. He did play a lot of golf, but he didn't always play golf. And my father would tell the story that, for example, let's say the president was playing golf with the ambassador from Russia. They would tell the press would come out to the first tee, there'd be all sorts of pictures and stuff, and they would actually play the first hole. And then Army Navy Country Club, it's my understanding, it's either the second or the third hole, makes a sharp turn and sort of like disappears. And the president would have one club on his shoulder, the ambassador would have the club on his shoulder. Anyway, they're not playing. They're just walking down the middle. And that the President Eisenhower, even at that day, was a Cold War warrior, meaning he didn't even trust the White House sometimes. And so this was a way that he had one-on-one, complete deniability, and they could talk out whatever they needed to talk about. Sure. And that's the sort of things that are not, these are not. And then the other story I want to lead up to is some of the personal stories that I had in my life. Is that my father for a time with Eisenhower was assigned to then Vice President Nixon and Mrs. Nixon, and during 1953 there was a goodwill tour out to Australia and the Far East, and while they were in Australia, my brother was born, and my father went to Mrs. Nixon and just was excited, and basically said, "I became a father for the second day." And Pat Nixon says to my dad, "Have you gotten anything for, it's a commemoration?" He says, "I don't have time for that." And she said, "Are you assigned to me today?" And he said, "Yes, ma'am." And she said, "Fine, we're going shopping." And so he didn't have any choice. They went to this store, and Mrs. Nixon bought a silver chalice that to this day the family still has. And so, there are stories like that that are not necessarily policy-driven. They're just sort of personal, this sort of stories. Coming up on the election of Kennedy. My father was assigned to Kennedy the entire time of his presidency. Going into that particular weekend, my father was not home. He was on the tour that President and Mrs. Kennedy were taking. It started in Florida. And they were often going to Texas, two states the president needed to carry in the upcoming election. And so he was gone. The day of the assassination started out like any other day. My mother went to work. I was in 11th grade. My brother was in 5th grade. We were obviously in the same school district, and we at that time we were living in a community in which we could all walk to school. So I walked to high school. He walked to elementary school. But a lot of people didn't. So I'm not saying the high school was all. There was a lot of people who walked. I was one of them, but they had a lot of buses besides. We didn't have cell phones in those days and stuff. So the school, to their credit, sometimes when you're in school, you never think school officials know what they're doing. To their credit, knew that as soon as they announced what had happened that day, pandemonium would take place. And they clearly had a lot of people who did take the bus, and they, what were we going to do with all these kids? So they did hold it. We went, I'm not exactly sure the exact time, but it was well after the event, probably as much as an hour, maybe 40 minutes after the event, after they knew. I was beginning my sixth period in chemistry class. And again, in 11th grade, you're old enough to remember this stuff, so this is not quite. And the principal came over the intercom and said that the President Kennedy had been assassinated, that Governor Connally had been wounded, and that a Secret Service agent had been killed. Now, that was incorrect, but that's what I knew. And so I immediately ran out of the room and went to the hall phone. Again, we didn't have what we have today. I don't remember what I put in, nickel, quarter, whatever it took to get. And I called my mother immediately, and it was very personal. And I didn't say, isn't it awful news, or did you hear? I said, is Dad okay? And she, without hesitation, said, he's fine. And the pandemonium was now taking place, and I said, fine. So I went home that night. My brother came home earlier. He got home because the elementary school was closer. And my brother tells a very interesting story, because the principal of the elementary school read from the same script, because it's the same school district. They clearly sent out, I'd say this because it was what he remembers is what I remember, that they had announced that the president, that the Governor Connally had been wounded, and that a Secret Service had been killed. And my brother did, I knew my dad was there, but my brother did not remember what shift my father was working that day. And he remembers running home, and on our refrigerator would be my father's schedule. And when it said 8 to 4, then that meant he was there. And so that's the first time my brother was sure. That night, my mother and my brother went down to the White House, because my father did not have a way home. That's, the world is just different, because there, you know, you don't leave a car down there all that for weeks or something. And so picked up my father, who came home on the follow-up plane. He was not in the with Lyndon Johnson and Mrs. Kennedy, and came on in the follow-up plane. And he went downstairs, and he typed out his report on an upright Underwood typewriter, and I remember it. And he probably shouldn't have, but I read the report that night. And what he basically said, it reminded me, and I'm not trying to say anything against my father, it reminded me of Sergeant Friday, of just the facts, man. I mean, this was not a color literary piece. This is what I remember. Boom, 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 boom. Almost with times, if he had times, it was time. It was what I did, what he remembered. And it said that he remembered 2 or 3 shots. And I said to him, after I read it, and then he knew he shouldn't have showed it to me, I said, how come you don't know if it was 2 or 3? And he looked right at me and he says, because the brain is not a tape recorder. I thought, that's a pretty solid answer. And when the point being, he wasn't trying to solve anything. He was just saying, this is what I remember. Take it for what it is. Now, it wasn't until then, I believe that it was on Sunday. I hope I'm right on Sunday. Lee Harvey Oswald was shot. Lee Harvey Oswald was shot on Sunday. I'm almost sure it was Sunday. I can't remember if it was Saturday or Sunday. But I think it was Sunday. We went to Baltimore, where my father grew up. My dad was off that day. And we were literally going into a restaurant, and of course everybody had TV on. It was 24/7 on this issue and only this issue. And we, at that moment, as we're literally taking our seat, we saw Oswald shot. And I remember my father sort of saying almost to himself, with his nightmare never end. I mean, it was like, he wasn't part of it, he wasn't there, but it was like, it was clearly. Then Monday came, the family all went down to the White House. I was inside the White House grounds the day of the procession, the funeral procession. I was very close to the North Portico, just off to the side. I clearly saw the procession. I saw Mrs. Kennedy and Edward and Robert Kennedy. I saw Charles de Gaulle and Haile Selassie. And even though I'm in 11th grade, I remembered at that time that Charles de Gaulle was much, much bigger physical man than I don't know what I was looking for. But he clearly stood out. He was just clearly taller. Haile Selassie had more medals on him than anybody I'd ever seen. And again, it's funny how after 50 years you remember certain things. There were other important dignitaries, but those two stick out in my mind. in terms of it. And when the day was over, we were driving home to our home in Montgomery County, Maryland. And I looked out the back window of our car, and I clearly saw Air Force One dip over the grave. And even to this day, that's really quite a moment. Now, I'm going to follow up on the story with my mother, if I can. Now, if I remember, I said I called her, Dad's fine. 3 days later, or about 3 or 4 days later, I finally asked my mother the follow-up question. And that was, "Mother, how did you know he was okay?" And of course, her answer was, "I didn't." So I said to her, "Suppose he wasn't okay." And she said we would have dealt with it at that time. And from then on, 11th grade boys sometimes don't think their mothers know very much. But that was one of those moments that was like, maybe she knows more than I think she does. So it was one of those moments in a relationship in a family. It's like, maybe I misjudged this lady. Maybe. And so that was the weekend. It was obviously a very traumatic weekend for for our family. My father passed away almost 10 days of 10 day almost 10 years exactly following the assassination. The assassination obviously was November 22nd. 10 years later in October, my father passed away. So almost exactly 10 years later. My father never spoke much about the event. He's not unlike a number of Secret Service up until recently, didn't talk about it at all. He was not any different. When I did ask him, he would just merely say things like, "I was not the investigating officer." I mean, again, almost a Sergeant Friday type of response. He never had any theories to my knowledge on, who did it, when did, and it's none of that. He testified, also his testimony was all the noise came from behind him. It doesn't mean that somebody couldn't have used a sign. He didn't say that. He didn't say there was nobody anyplace else. He said, again, almost clinically, all the noise came from over his right shoulder, which was the school book depository. He specifically added, however, he did not know whether or not more than one gun fired. Again, the issue is the brain and the ears are just not, if two guns go off, you have to be pretty special to hear two different. And so he was very clinical about it. It was not, like, "I know what was fired." No, I don't know what was fired. I heard two or three noises, and it was all over my right shoulder. My father did get to the, he was in the car right behind the president. They did go to Parkland Hospital. And in case, I'm not trying to put a plug in, but I understand a new movie's coming out called Parkland, and it's about Park, and somebody is actually playing my father. So he was there. He took a little bit of grief from people who wrote later that he made what he thought was an appropriate decision, and some people questioned it. He was a shift leader, meaning that the way the presidential detail is organized, to my knowledge even today, but I can't be sure of that, is there was a head of the White House detail. And the head of the White House detail then had three shift leaders because you protect the president 24/7. And so my dad was the 8-to-4 shift leader. So he was in effect, now the head of the White House detail, which was also there, but my father was a shift leader, and basically he left two of his men with Kennedy and moved the rest to Johnson. And when he got to Parkland Hospital, he had to ask politely. Mrs. Kennedy did not want to let the president go, and he had to take a look at the president. And his testimony was, "You do not have to be a physician to know that something is very, very seriously wrong. And that the person who's going to be the president going forward, at least for a while, is going to be the vice president." And so he took a little bit of criticism, but he basically, he did encourage, most people, he did encourage the vice president to leave as immediately as possible. The vice president would not leave until basically he had confirmation from the Kennedy administration that in fact the president had passed away and that it was okay. Then, as we well know, it's documented that there was a little bit of a spat as to whether or not the president's body was going to be actually removed from Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy would not leave without the body, and then acting or whatever. I'm not sure. I mean, I would argue that once a president passed away, the new president's president, regardless of swearing in, but I'm not going to get into some sort of legal issue here. It's irrelevant. What it then became President Johnson wouldn't leave unless Mrs. Kennedy left. And so the Secret Service said, "Fine, the body's going with us." The Dallas police said, "The body's not leaving. This is a crime scene." Well, the body left. What can I say? The body left. It came home. So that was, and then my father did not get on that plane because they changed shifts. And so a new team took over it that way, and my father came home in the follow-up plane. It was a, I don't think that even to this day I fully appreciated the impact of my father. My father was, when he a very tough individual, and I don't think he was, it was very easy for him to show very much emotion. I saw a little of emotion just once about the event, but he was very careful keeping it from the kids. And he was, I think that in retrospect, if I could do anything differently about that, I would have just hugged him and said it'll be okay. I mean, he was almost, he's any human, and he was just, I think he was hurting more his life. And I think that's one of the reasons the agents never talked very much about it. It's like, what are they going to say? I mean, it's their job to protect the president, and they didn't. Now, what do you say about it? There is no, there's no if, ands, or buts. There's no any, but nobody else could have. None of that helps. And the answer is, and so I think that they all carried that a certain amount of grief for the rest of their life. Like I said, most agents didn't. My father didn't. My father did not want things written about him. He made that very clear to me. He was just, it was almost like what I know stays with me. And so that's the story of the weekend. That's the story that my father leading up to President Kennedy and the assassination.
Check this, make sure we're still okay for time. Sure. You mentioned that he kept it mostly to himself.
Yes.
But was life at home, like, was there a big difference after that, or?
I'd like to say I remember. I do not remember much difference. My father was gone a lot. Ironically, I mean, I went off to college then soon thereafter, in one more year. My father soon had a job literally at the White House, in which he did not travel. He became President Johnson's receptionist, which used to be a civilian job, was non-Secret Service, and in terms of heightened security. And so he came home more often. But unfortunately for me, I'm off to college. I'm doing things. So my brother got to know my father better than I did, simply because he was gone so much. And then it was when Dad actually came home, I was off doing my life. And so I don't remember anything fundamentally a lot different. But anytime we would be at dinner or something, if it came up, it was like, that's not what I, you know, I don't. We're not talking. If he told a story, and he told some, as I told you them, they will almost always be like he had a mental note. It was almost like it was 10 years old. My father and my mother gave up. My mother, in particular, gave up something for my father's career, and that is, my parents did not socialize very much, and if they did, it was generally with other agents. And the reason is that if you go to a party, what do you ask somebody? What do you do? Right? Well, I work for the government. What do you do for the government? Pretty soon, I work for the Secret Service. What do you do? Well, I protect the president. Well, can we get into the White House? Okay, the answer is no, and it's none of your business. And, well, what's the president really like? I'm really not telling you. Well, that doesn't go real. I mean, it's not a really good, easy conversation. And so, therefore, they just avoided it. And so they didn't do a, they didn't go out. If my mother went out to events, it would be an event with church or something. But it was, she didn't, they didn't go out. I mean, I hardly ever remember my parents together saying, we're going out to dinner with another couple, outside of a couple in the Secret Service. And that's a real price that that she paid for that. Because everybody wants to know something, and he wasn't going to tell us, he wasn't going to tell anybody. The other issue in terms of a livelihood that my mother had to deal with, that's when she was probably tougher, if the world is different than it is today, meaning, and the president could actually leave town without somebody knowing. Some days my father would go into work knowing he's not coming home. But as say he was, it's not a need to know basis. My mother would get a call from the Secret Service office and saying that her husband will is not coming home tonight, and would call when he could, and if there's an emergency, call the main office and they'll get a hold of him wherever he happens to be. Okay? Well, the next day you read in the paper that President Eisenhower landed in Mexico City. Okay, well, now we know where he is. But it was, so the world was, I mean, that doesn't happen now, but they actually could go off and get on a plane and take off.
Sure.
And so a lot of times, and we weren't always completely sure where it was, but I don't remember any major issues. But it's, I mean, it clearly ate at them, and you never know what that ultimately does. And to this day, my father, the cause of death was considered a heart attack. No, there wasn't any sort of big testing on it. That's what we think it was. I think it was just the issue. You just can't do that job as long as he did and not have an impact. And I just think you do. What else would you like?
You were in high school, so did your classmates know what your dad did for a
Yes,
living or
yes.
no?
Yeah, that was, I had, when I got home, I had many calls in terms of is everything okay? And so when I said my mother and my brother went down to the White House that night, they left me at home intentionally because then I was old enough, I could, people would come to the house, people would call, and we had lots of attention. That was, it was a very difficult time because you really didn't know what was going on. And of course, school was canceled then. And then we came back, and you know, sometimes people would ask questions, and just as the kids, and fortunately, and we're unfortunately, I mean, that's the reason Dad didn't want to share anything or very little, and that's just because I do remember that in writing class in English, I wrote a fictitious account of what took place at Parkland Hospital. And I showed it to my father because I was pretty proud of it. I thought it was well written. And he said, you can't turn it in. And I said, why? He said, I said, this is not, this is just, I mean, he said, I know that. He said, but nobody's going to believe that. Okay, so any event, anyway, we had to get the teacher involved. It was something, and it was like, you know, this did not happen. And you know, we cannot have anything out there that somebody's going to say, well, his son wrote this in English, or this is much, this is, and it was like, and so I learned a sensitivity issue. It was like, you say something, people assume it's true. Okay, and so you can't just make something up in an event like this. And again, it was one of these, I mean, today we would call it a historical novel, of which, you know, the event's true, my father was actually there, but a lot of things I made up. And he said, you can't do that. You just can't do that. I said, other authors do. Yeah, but they're not my son. Not my son. You can't do that. And so that, I mean, that's the sort of stuff that that happened afterwards. I did use resources of the day to just write a report on basically what we knew about that time. And of course, as long as I footnoted almost everything that I was saying, my father was not uncomfortable with that because a lot of things came out. I mean, used papers and a lot of things were coming out at that time. As long as I referenced somebody else, then he said, I have no problem with that. So I did do some of that. I'm trying to think of anything else. There's one thing people ask the question is, would agents take a bullet? And of course, you've seen in movies and TV and stuff like that. The answer is, I don't think there was any question in my mind. I'm not saying this is how I am. There was no question in my mind, and again, I'm not being critical, that in terms of my father's priorities, the job came first and the family came second. I don't think there's, again, I'm not trying to say anything, and here's my evidence for that. It is 1962, October 1962. And we're having the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I'm in 10th grade, and I'm still old enough to know what's going on. And my father and my mother are whispering. So here's my advice to parents. If you ever want your kids to listen, don't scream, whisper. And my parents were supposed to be in bed, and I got up to use the restroom. And in order to do this, I had to go across the hall. My parents were in a very small house on the dining room table, and my father is whispering to my mother. Well, of course, you can't ask for a better opportunity. Just, you know, you want to hear what Dad has to say. And he is now explaining to his wife, if something happens, he's, by the way, he's bringing home water, which he never did before, and he's bringing home Sterno for heat and stuff. And we didn't understand all this. And he said, if something happens, I'm not coming home. I'm going with the president. What do you just, but what do you think this is? This is Washington, D.C. What do you think the crosshairs are? Okay, I mean, there's gonna be nothing to come home to. So let's just quit with the nonsense, and then I'll see you when everything clears. There will be no clearing. There will be no clear. Even I understood that. And later I asked my mother about that event, which of course was just written right into my mind. And she says, I don't remember the event. And I thought, how could you not remember that? And it could be just selective memory. I take her at her word that it's just, it was so traumatic. It was like, well, it's not going to happen, so I don't have to remember it. And so that was just, but I mean, he made it very clear that there was, I'll leave water in Cerno, but you're on your own, and I'm heading off wherever we're going. Of course, I did not know then that they could, for all I know, been heading to West Virginia, where the government was going to go, and but of course, we didn't know that then. And what's a place in West Virginia? It's a resort. What was it?
Greenbrier,
yeah. And that they built an entire government operation, and they used the resort as a cover. And you can go through it now. And so, all right, keep going. What other?
Did you ever get to meet the president?
Yes, I met several presidents. I met several. One of the most fun I had was Lyndon Johnson's president. And my father took the family down for the lighting of the Christmas tree in Washington, D.C. And for reasons I do not know why, people, and I'll tell you why in a sec, but the Christmas tree is in a place in which there are not real very many buildings very close by. I mean, and it was a very, very cold night, and my mother was clearly in trouble. I mean, she was beyond being cold, and it was like Dad was really worried about her. And the closest building that we could get into was the White House. And so they probably wouldn't let us in today, but, you know, it was a different time and stuff. Anyway, he flipped his badge, and they let him in. So we went into the White House, and so to let my mother warm up. She was clearly, again, who knows what it was, but she was clearly in trouble, and he recognized. Well, who walks in but President Johnson? So he says, hey, would you like some hot chocolate? So we all have hot chocolate with the president. So it was like, but of course, doesn't anybody do this? one of the stories that it has nothing to do with this and probably will be cut for many, but it's one of my personal favorite stories, is that my father one day, Harold Wilson was Prime Minister of England, and he came to visit Lyndon Johnson, and my father said, why don't you come on down to the White House? I said, do you think you'll enjoy it? Because a lot of commotion and stuff. And he said, we'll go to lunch at the White House Mess. And the White House Mess is a mess. It's run by the Navy, and they call it the White House Mess. It's a small dining room, but trust me, you just don't get in there because a lot of things are discussed. But Dad took me there, and it was a really neat thing to do. Well, many, many years later, my youngest son has an appointment or is a staff person for George W. Bush. And he invites me to the White House, and we go and have lunch at the White House Mess. As a dad, it doesn't get any better than that. I thought, okay, I'll just be the connection. It's okay with me. It's okay with me. It had nothing to do with the Kennedy, but it was just a good story.
Sure.
What else?
I think that's all I had. Really.
Okay. Yeah, I hope you didn't mind me doing a question and answer. I just told the story.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different time, like I said, my father did not share stories and didn't want things written about him. So I cannot tell stories about Marilyn Monroe. I do not know any. I did not know to ask him. I have no personal knowledge of any of that. And he was just, he did his job. He went to work, and he saw things that, and for somebody of his upbringing and stuff, he grew up on a farm. I'm not trying to be funny. We had a good life, but he was a government official. We paid our bills, and I went to college and stuff, and I had good parents. But it wasn't like we went to big expensive hotels and stuff. On the other hand, he always went to big expensive hotels because that's where they were staying. On the other hand, he always was there. So it was. He saw a life that, you know, other people of his income would never see. I remember asking him a story once when, let's say, there was a really important meeting, say, between the president and, say, a foreign government, say, overseas. And I said, does the Secret Service stay in the room? He says, almost always we'll have somebody in the room with the president. We don't want the president to somehow go into a room and somehow disappear. He said, "Almost away." And he said, "But it was never me." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, unless I had to be." But he said, I always assign somebody to be there." And he said, "Because you might hear something, and I can't slip on what I don't know." I thought that was pretty good. He says, "You know, I would never do it intentionally, but, you know, we're human. And if I don't know it, I can't say it. So I don't want to know." I thought, wow, I'd be curious as hell. I'd be curious as hell. Like, what are they talking about? All right. Well, thank you.